A Letter from Nana Rose by Kristen Harper. Read by Laurel Lefko for Saga Egmont. Prologue. She woke from her nap with a gasp. She'd been dreaming about her twin again. A dream so real it could have been a memory. It was a hot, dazzling day in July 1948. The sisters had just graduated high school, and they were summering at their family's Bayside estate on Dune Island, off the Massachusetts coast. They'd spent the morning strolling along the flats and combing tidal pools for treasures, an amethyst-colored piece of beach glass, two bay scallop shells as big as their palms, a stone shaped like a butterfly. When the tide rolled in and the water was deep enough, Hattie and Rose swam and dived and floated until their fingers pruned and their teeth chattered. Then they climbed the wooden stairs up the steep dune and followed a narrow path through sea lavender and beach grass to the rustic two-bedroom cottage. After serving themselves large squares of strawberry shortcake, they carried their plates out to the patio. Seated in brightly painted Adirondack chairs, the twins could smell honeysuckle and wild rose scent intermingling in the breeze. They listened to the gentle swells folding against the shoreline, the gulls squawking in the distance. The sisters ate slowly, savoring their dessert. In between bites, they talked about their futures, which seemed to stretch before them endlessly, shimmering like the bay. Life certainly didn't turn out the way we imagined it would, she thought, now 91 years old. Although it made her breathless, she hefted herself out of the recliner and shuffled to the desk for a piece of paper and a pen. It was time to share her secret. Chapter 1. Saturday, June 18th. First things first, Jill Sampson announced to herself after she got out of the car in front of Nana Rose's house on Seabreeze Lane. That was what her grandmother used to say when Jill and her two older sisters, Rachel and Brooke, arrived at her Hope Haven residence on Dune Island when they were girls. They'd scramble out of the back seat, nearly suffocate her with embraces, and then one of them would urge the others, "Let's go down to the beach." "Not until we unload the trunk," their father invariably objected. "First things first," their grandmother always countered. "They've got their priorities straight, Jimmy. They've said hello to me, and now they've got to go say hello to the bay. You were the same way when you were a boy. You'd race off and I wouldn't see you again until supper time. The unpacking can wait." By the time they'd get back, their father would have already emptied the trunk and taken their suitcases to their rooms for them. He was as happy as Nana was that we were so excited to see the beach again, Jill realized, overcome with loneliness. It had been 9 years since she'd lost her mother. Her father had died from a heart attack 6 years ago now, and Nana had passed away in March. Because Jill's sisters hadn't arrived on the island yet, there was no one there for her to embrace. No one there to embrace her. She couldn't face going into Nana's empty home by herself, so she trekked up the driveway and followed the crushed shell path around the house. In contrast to the flat, neat rectangle of tree-shaded lawn in the front yard, the sandy backyard was a wild composition of beech grass and beech plum, bayberry and bearberry, sea lavender and seaside goldenrod. In the right-hand corner, an ever-spreading thicket of wild roses filled the air with its sweet fragrance. Jill surveyed it all, but she didn't stop walking until she'd reached the upper platform of the wooden staircase leading down a steep dune to a private beach where the water nearly lapped the dunes at high tide and receded at least a quarter mile at low. Right now, it was coming in. The sweep of Royal